In this series, we're talking about giving up and taking up things for Lent. And we've read a number of passages from the Old Testament, actually, in this series about when the Israelites were wandering in the wilderness. And that's partly by design because Lent for 40 days is kind of like a journey in the wilderness where we give certain things up in order to make space to hear from God or experience God in new ways. And today I want to read you another story from wandering in the wilderness. And so it's found in Numbers chapter 14. And if you brought a Bible, or even if you didn't, I want you to grab one of the chair Bibles in front of you in the chair. And try to find Numbers. It's an easy book to find if you're new to the Bible. It's in the Old Testament. It's near the front. It's the fourth book of the Bible, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, and then Numbers. And we'll be in Numbers 14. And Numbers is one of those interesting books because you hear it and you're like, well, there's lots of numbers in the Bible. But it's actually the title of the book because at the very beginning of this book and at the end of this book, they take a census in Israel and they count how many people are in Israel. And so they named the book, at least in English, they called it Numbers. But it's interesting because the ancient Hebrew name of this book is actually just In the Wilderness. That's what the name of this book is called because it's about the time when the Israelites are in the wilderness. And we're going to look at a really fascinating story about this time where the people do something interesting and then God does something interesting and it raises an issue that I think we all need to confront today. So starting in Numbers chapter 14, verse 1, this is what it says. That night, all the members of the community raised their voices and wept aloud. Now, before we keep reading, let me tell you real quick what had happened. They were in the wilderness because remember the story about God delivering the people from Egypt? So he delivered them out of slavery. They had been traveling in this desert wilderness for a couple of months, and they had come to the edge of this promised land. It's called the promised land because God had promised it to them. He had said, I've got this land. It's reserved for you. It's an amazing land. And so they get to the edge of it. They send some scouts into the promised land to check it out, and the scouts come back, and a couple of them, a guy named Joshua and Caleb, come back, and they say, the land is amazing. Like, it's everything that God said it would be. Let's go in and take it. But all the other scouts come back and they tell the people, the land is nice, but there's tons of people still living there. And they have armies and they have fortified cities. And there's no way we could ever take them. I mean, there's just no way. I mean, they'll devour us if we go try to settle into this land. And so they share this news with everyone. And it says, everyone starts to raise their voices and weep out loud. And then going on in verse 2, this is what happens next. All the Israelites grumbled against Moses and Aaron. And the whole assembly said to them, if only we had died in Egypt or in this wilderness, why is the Lord bringing us to this land only to let us fall by the sword? Our wives and children will be taken as plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? And they said to each other, we should choose a leader and go back to Egypt. Now, we sort of read up until this place a few weeks ago. They cry out, they grumble, they complain, and the people are angry. They're upset because they can't believe they've gotten to this point. Moses and their leaders have brought them to this point where they're just going to die trying to get into this promise. And God has brought them to this point where they're just going to die here. And they basically say, let's just pick a new leader and go back to Egypt. That would be way, way better. Look at how Moses and Aaron respond in the next verse. Then Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole Israelite assembly gathered there. Joshua, the son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had explored the land, tore their clothes. And they said to the entire Israelite assembly, the land we passed through and explored is exceedingly good. If the Lord is pleased with us, he'll lead us into that land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and he'll give it to us. They're basically saying, look, this land's amazing. It's so, I mean, we can almost taste how good it is. It's like God has opened his hand and given us the desires of our hearts, everything we could ever want. All we have to do is accept it from him, and he'll give it to us. And so they go on and they say, don't rebel against the Lord, and do not be afraid of the people of the land, because we will devour them. Their protection is gone, but the Lord is with us. So do not be afraid of them. So basically, Moses and Aaron are saying, look, we got to trust God. Like, we've got to hang in there. Like, he's delivered us up until now. I mean, do you remember, guys? He brought us out of Egypt. Do you remember the Egyptian army he destroyed? Like, we saw it with our own eyes. Do you remember the cloud that he leads us by? Do you remember how he's led us through the desert? He gave us the law. When we were hungry, he gave us food. When we were thirsty, he gave us water. Like, he's given us everything we could ever want. All we've got to do is wait for him, trust in him. He is with us. He'll give us everything we want. Just don't rebel against him. Don't disobey him. Don't fail him now. But the people wouldn't have any of it. Look at what happens next in verse 10. But the whole assembly talked about stoning them. So they start picking up stones. And then the glory of the Lord appeared at the tent of meeting to all the Israelites. And the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people treat me with contempt? How long will they refuse to believe me in spite of all the signs I have performed among them? I will strike them down with a plague and destroy them, but I will make you into a nation greater and stronger than they. So this is interesting because the tables have turned. The people were angry, but now God is angry. He has done so much for these people. He's taken care of them every step of the way, and every step of the way they've grumbled. Every step of the way they've complained. Every step of the way they've wanted, like, the next thing. The last thing wasn't good enough. And they've stopped trusting God. They've started disobeying God. They don't believe that God can provide for them anymore. And it's almost like God's patience is gone. Like, in this speech, it's almost like he's saying, look, I've had it up to here with you guys. Enough of the grumbling. Enough of the complaining. Look, here's the deal, Moses. I'm just going to wipe them all out. Like, I'm done. I'm done with them. I'm going to wipe them all out. I'm just going to start over with you. And then it'll fresh start. I don't need these people. If they're just going to complain, if they're not going to believe me, if they're not going to trust me, let's just start over. And God is angry at the people. It's a fascinating story because it starts with the people getting angry at God. And then God gets angry with the people. So there's this interesting emotion of anger going on in this story. And we can all relate because we know what it's like to be angry, right? I mean, sometimes there's kind of there's the good kind of anger. Sometimes we get angry at injustice in the world. We call that righteous indignation sometimes. Like when we see somebody strong taking advantage of someone weak, or the powerful taking advantage of the powerless. And that made God angry too. I mean, you read through the Bible, and all throughout the Bible it talks about God getting angry at injustice in the world, when people are treated as second-class citizens, when the poor are taken advantage of, when nobody cares about the widows or the orphans or the immigrants. That makes God angry, and sometimes it makes us angry as well. And that's a righteous, good anger. But if you were to think back over the last week in your life, that's probably not what made you angry. That's probably not what made me angry. I mean, if you just thought back to what's happened in the last 7 days of your life, there's probably a lot of other things that made you angry. I mean, did you get angry when traffic was kind of slow and you were late for a meeting and it just wasn't speeding up? Nobody was like parting the sea so you could kind of get there really quickly. Did you get angry when somebody did something at work that wasn't fair or said something at work that wasn't fair? Did you get angry when you saw somebody else succeeding where you're failing, or you just keep spinning your wheels and it just comes so easy to them and it's just so frustrating watching what happens with them? Did you get angry with your kids when they did the same thing over and over again, even though you keep telling them? Did you get angry when in the middle of the night you heard screaming from your kids and you thought something was wrong, and so you ran upstairs and you ran to their room to help them, and one of them looked at you and said, Daddy, my covers came off the bed. Can you fix them? I don't know. Just saying. Did that make you angry this week? Did you get angry when things didn't go your way? Did you get angry when the circumstances didn't turn out the way you wanted them to? Did you get angry when somebody inconvenienced you? You see, all these things happen in our lives every day, and they make us frustrated, irritated. It turns into anger. We lose our cool. We lose our temper. We're pushed to the edge, and some of us sort of spin out of control. We start yelling, and we get angry, and we take it out on somebody. Others of us are really good at internalizing it and kind of pushing it deep down inside and keeping all the anger in there. But the question I want to ask today is, what do we do with that anger? What do we do with our anger when we feel it? Because we can't stop, let's be honest, we can't stop ourselves from getting angry. Anger at one level, at the most original level, is just an emotional response we feel to something that's happened to us, right? Or to circumstances in our lives. It just wells up into anger. I mean, even God got angry, right? He's angry right here. And so there's an emotional response because in his case, the people had kept complaining and grumbling over and over, and they wouldn't trust him. And it's like, oh, what am I going to do with you guys? And so we have that emotional response in our lives. That's okay, but what do we do with that? What do we do with our anger? Well, let's go back and see what God did with his anger. Remember, he had said, I'm done with the Israelites. I'm just going to destroy them. I'll send a plague and wipe them all out and start over with you, Moses. And look at how Moses responds. Numbers 14, verse 13. Moses said to the Lord, then the Egyptians will hear about it. By your power, you brought these people up from among them, and they will tell the inhabitants of this land about it. They have already heard that you, Lord, are with these people, and that you, Lord, have been seen face to face, that your cloud stays over them, and that you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. If you put all these people to death, leaving none alive, the nations who have heard this report about you will say, well, the Lord was not able to bring these people into the land that he promised them on oath, and so he slaughtered them in the wilderness. So on one level, it's like Moses is appealing to God's reputation here. Like, God, your reputation is on the line. Like, everybody has heard about how you saved these people from Egypt and how you're going to bring them to this new land. And if you give up now, what are they going to say about you? I mean, think about the greater mission, God. You said you were going to save these people and redeem them, and then you linked yourself to them. Like, your reputation is now intertwined in their reputation. And if you hit a few road bumps along the way in the wilderness and you can't overcome those and your patience wears out so that you just have to like slaughter the people and destroy them and say, I'm done with them, well, then what are you going to do about all the other people in the world that you want to save, that you want to rescue, that you want to redeem, that when you save and rescue and redeem are going to complain and not trust and grumble and not get their way, just like these people have? If you can't handle these people, what are you going to do with everyone else? And it's like Moses appeals to the circumstances and the outcome and the consequences if God wipes everyone out. Like, oh, what's that going to look like? But then Moses appeals to God's character. And look at what he says in the next verse, verse 17. Now, may the Lord's strength be displayed, just as you have declared. The Lord is slow to anger, abounding in love, and forgiving sin and rebellion. Yet, he does not leave the guilty unpunished. He punishes the children for the sin of the parents to the third and fourth generation. And that's kind of a loaded statement. We'll come back and unpack that sometime. But basically, it's saying, don't worry, people do have to pay the consequences of their sin eventually. But Moses goes on. He says, in accordance with your great love, forgive the sin of these people just as you have pardoned them from the time they left Egypt until now. So it's like Moses says, hey, God, don't forget. Do you remember what you told us about you? Do you remember what you told us you were like? Do you remember those phrases that we keep repeating over and over and over about you that we've we've written songs and we sing these songs over and over and over about you. It's littered throughout everything we say. We always say, the Lord is gracious. He's slow to anger. He's rich, or he's abounding in love. And he's good to all. And so when you get angry, it's like your anger is always tempered by your love. Your anger is always measured by your mercy. And so, because you're good, God, because you're gracious, God, because you are slow to anger, would you forgive these people once again? Now, it's interesting because I don't think God had forgotten this. Like, I don't think God was going, oh, yeah, that's right. I said that I was slow to anger and, I know, okay, you know. I don't think it's that way. I think this was God's way of letting Moses and Aaron and the leaders and the people work it out in their own minds, work it out in their own hearts. Remember that indeed the Lord is gracious and he's slow to anger. He's rich in love, and he wants what's good for all of us. He wants to give us this promised land. He wants to give us the goodness and the grace that he has for us. And so he chooses to forgive. He chooses when we don't trust him. He chooses when his patience has had it up to here to still simply be slow to anger, willing to forgive. Now, this doesn't mean that God lets the people off the hook. In fact, later he would actually say, you know what? Until you can actually learn to trust me, you're going to have to keep wandering in the wilderness. Like, until you learn, and if that takes an entire generation, if that takes 40 years of wandering in the wilderness, until you can learn to trust me, then that's the consequences of what you've chosen. So he doesn't let him off the hook. He says, yeah, if you just keep not trusting me, if you keep doing the same thing over and over and grumbling and complaining, yeah, there's consequences of that. You've kind of invited those on yourself. But he says all that after he says this in the very next verse. The Lord replied, I have forgiven them as you asked. I've forgiven them as you asked. Why? Because that's what he does. The Lord is gracious. He's slow to anger. He's rich in love. And he's good to all. Now, if that's true about God, then what do we do with our anger? What do we do in our lives when things make us frustrated, when things don't go our way, when somebody offends us, when just the details and the bills and the kids and the junk of life just starts piling up and we get irritated and frustrated, when roommates and coworkers keep doing the same things over and over and they don't ever listen to us. When we get angry, what do we do with our anger? Is it possible to give up our anger? Well, I want to offer a couple of suggestions of what we should do with our anger. Number one, we should follow God's example. We should follow God's example. We too should be slow to anger, rich in love, gracious and compassionate and good to all, which means we forgive people even when things don't go the way we want them to, even when they offend us. It means sometimes we have to take our anger and simply give it up in order to forgive other people. Look at what Paul wrote. This is a great passage. We read a verse from it last week, and we're going to read the surrounding verses this week. This is in Ephesians 4. Look at what he says. He writes, in your anger, do not sin. There's some quotes around that. I'll come back to that in a second. In your anger, do not sin. Do not let the sun go down while you are still angry, and do not give the devil a foothold. So get rid of all bitterness, rage, and anger, brawling and slander, along with every form of malice. Be kind and compassionate to one another, forgiving each other just as in Christ God forgave you. So it's like Paul begins by saying, well, we're going to get angry. Like, that's a fact. Yeah, that's the emotional thing that wells up. Like, he doesn't say you can stop that. He says, in your anger, like when you do get angry, when that wells up inside of you, we're going to get angry. When that happens, don't sin. And then he gives some really helpful practical advice. He says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. In other words, when you get angry, if you go to bed at night and you're still angry, that's not good. Like if you put your head on the pillow at night and you're still having imaginary conversations with other people or imaginary conversations with God and you're still like, that's not good. Like every single night, make sure you deal with your anger before you even go to sleep. Because if you don't, well, you'll just let it fester. And it'll gnaw away at you. And you'll begin to hold grudges. And it'll begin to turn into bitterness. And your heart will start to get hard. And you know what you're doing is you're giving the devil a foothold. Like if you go to bed at night angry, you are giving the devil a foothold to let that anger turn into bitterness, rage, deep dissatisfaction, grudges. And so he says, just get rid of it. You got to figure out how to give up your anger every day. When it comes, when your frustration, irritation, and anger, when it comes, you gotta get rid of it. You got to deal with it. And the way you deal with it is by following God's example. You simply look at how he dealt with it when it came to us. I mean, how did God deal with it when he looked down at a world and saw all the brokenness, all the disobedience, all the people who didn't trust him, all the people who kept grumbling about him, all of us who often reject him? When he looked down at all of the world and he saw all the sin, and then he saw people reject his own son who came to simply love people and call them to a better life, he saw that. And his greatest expression of anger was taking that rejection of his son and turning it into an offer of forgiveness to every single one of us. And so you want to know how God dealt with his anger towards the entire world, towards Israel, towards every single one of us? He decided to offer us forgiveness, another chance. He decided to be slow to anger. Gracious, rich in love, and good to all. Which means, if God looks at all of us, and in his justifiable anger and frustration with us, he chooses to forgive, how can we not do that with other people in our lives? How can we not look at him and say, God has forgiven me in Christ. How can I not forgive others the same way? So we give up our anger by following God's example. But it's a second suggestion that I want to offer this morning. We deal with our anger by waiting on God's justice. We wait for God's justice. You see, the reason we usually get angry in our lives, if you think about it, is because we feel like some injustice has taken place. We've been treated unfairly, or something or has happened that was unfair or unjust, and we feel like it needs to be set right. It needs to be dealt with. Somebody or something needs to pay the consequences for what they've done to me or to us. And the question then becomes, well, if we just forgive people all the time, if we just kind of let things go, if we just say, well, I'll be slow to anger, I'll look past it again, aren't we letting people off the hook? Like, aren't we letting people just kind of keep getting away? Like, it's almost like we're saying, yeah, I'm kind of going to get angry, but not really. I'll just let it go. You just keep doing to me whatever you want to me, and I'll just keep forgiving you all the time. It just feels like we're just letting people, I mean, doesn't it feel like we're just letting things go? Well, the answer is no, we're not. Because what we're doing is we're trusting in God's justice. We're waiting for him because we believe he's a more perfect and better judge than any of us could ever be. And so we trust and we wait for him to take care of the consequences, whether it's in this life or in the next. We trust that he knows better how to sort out matters of justice and consequences and punishment than we ever could. And that's why, you remember that passage we read from Paul where he had a quote at the very beginning? He was actually quoting an old psalm. And this is what the psalm said. It's Psalm 37. It said, "Be still before the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. Refrain from anger and turn from wrath. Do not fret. It only leads to evil. For those who are evil will be destroyed." It's kind of like God will take care of them, like one day or another. Like he will take all the people that you think should be punished for what they've done to you or for all the stuff they've caused in your life. Don't worry. God will take care of it. But those who hope in the Lord, those who trust in him, those who wait on his justice, they'll inherit the land. They'll taste all of the goodness of the land that he has prepared for them. But it requires waiting. It requires trusting. It requires believing that God's a better judge than we could ever be. And it's also why Paul would write, and I want to read you one more passage, and these are some of the most powerful words in the New Testament. Paul would write this to his friends in Rome. He wrote, "Do not repay anyone evil for evil. Be careful to do what is right in the eyes of everyone. If it is possible, as far as it depends on you, live at peace," meaning not angry, "with everyone. Do not take revenge, my dear friends, but leave room for God's wrath. For it is written, 'It is mine to avenge,' or as the King James Version would say, 'Vengeance is mine. I will repay,' says the Lord. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." So basically Paul's saying, look, we don't need to be the ones who take vengeance. We don't need to be the ones who are punishing. We don't need to be the ones who are meting out the consequences to all the people and all the circumstances that we are so frustrated and angry about. We leave room for God to do that. We trust God will ultimately do that. We trust that the things that make us angry potentially make God more angry than any of us, and that God can sort it out better than all of us. Now, a couple of qualifiers real quick. That doesn't mean we don't work against injustice in the world. That doesn't mean that there aren't consequences to some people's behavior or to my behavior. That doesn't mean that if someone hurts you or treats you wrongly, you don't need to potentially do something about it. I mean, if somebody keeps hurting you, you run away. Like, you don't let them keep hurting you and just say, well, God will sort it out. I mean, if he's beating you, you call the police. You run in the other direction. But if we set that aside for a second and we go back to the last week in each one of our lives and we think about all the little things that frustrated us, all the little things that irritated us, all the little things that started to get our emotions boiling over, all the things that made us angry, what would it look like if we were able to say, I'm going to follow God's example. I'm going to be slow to anger. I'm going to give that over to God. I'm going to forgive people if as best as I possibly can. If I can, as best as possible, I'm going to try to live at peace with everyone. And I'm not going to try to repay evil with evil. I mean, if they did evil to me, then just doing evil back to them, it's not going to do anything. I'm ultimately going to leave that up to God. And I'm going to trust in his perfect justice. And I'm going to believe in the power of goodness and forgiveness over the power of evil and anger. So, the question to close with is simple. A few questions, maybe. What kind of anger are you carrying around? What kind of frustrations are you carrying around? Which ones do you need to give over to God? Who do you possibly need to forgive? Where in your life and in your world are you quick to anger? Where, who is it in your life who just pushes your buttons? What circumstances are you find yourself in your life that just tend to always push you over the edge and get you in a place where you're so frustrated and irritated and just, like, where do you find yourself saying that? Who are the people that you find yourself saying that about? And how can you take that anger and figure out how to give it up? Follow God's example. Wait for Him. Trust in Him. Him who had every right in the world to be angry at every one of us, but who looked at us and said, "But I love them." Maybe this week, all you need to simply do is remember that one statement about God. The Lord is gracious, slow to anger, rich in love, and good to all. And if we can remember that statement every single day, and if we can say that statement every single day, and if we can worship God by saying those words, "God, you are gracious, you're slow to anger, you're rich in love, and you're good to all," then maybe that'll give us the courage and the power to follow His examples in our lives when people or circumstances make us angry. And maybe that'll help us enter the promised land of a life without anger. I mean, think about that. Wouldn't that be amazing? A life without anger? It's almost like God saying, "I've got that for you. But you got to trust me. You got to wait for me. You got to trust and hand it over to me. And then you'll be able to taste and see how good that land is." Let me pray. Lord God, we do want to reflect today just on your goodness to every single one of us. Because in light of your goodness, and in light of your mercy, and in light of your grace, and in light of your unconditional love, sometimes the things that we get frustrated and angry about pale in comparison. So God, I pray as we think about the way that you view us, as we think about the way that you love us, as we think about the way that you simply open your hands and give us the desires of our hearts. And then when we don't trust you, you're so patient. You're so long-suffering. You're so willing to just keep on forgiving over and over and over, God. I pray that that translates into something in our own lives. God, help us to trust you more. Help us to love you more, and help us to follow your example more. I pray this in your name. Amen.